Last week we started on a sanctuary theme. We met with our worship team and we're actually planning to go through all of Easter. And if you didn't know that we're still in Easter, and I have an opportunity for learning for you. But we're going to walk through the sanctuary theme, and I was thrilled at a couple of things that have been happening at this church, that just the response to extending our own sanctuary. One of them is that we are going to be converting one of our rooms to a toddler, I don't know what you would call it, fussy child rescue kind of an area, which would be right over there. So that if you have a child and you want to be able to take them out of the service and have a nearby place to go, we're going to make that happen in the next month or two. Thank you to the trustees for doing that. And I think that they'll be asking for help. Today, I'm very excited by 1 John. It is an amazing passage, and the one that was read this morning is actually from Peterson's The Message. So if you're wondering why this didn't match with your pew Bible, you know that I have a kind of affinity towards that interpretation of the Bible, because it's, for me, it's much more approachable. And so I'm going to start with a quote from that. My dear children, let's not just talk about love. Let's practice real love. That is the only way we'll know we're living truly. Living in God's reality, let's practice real love. And I'll tell you, if you ever needed a call to action, today's gospel is for you. If you came this morning to worship God, which I expect we all did, but expecting to sing a few songs, make an offering, and sit quietly listening to the sermon, and then go on with your day as before, I'm going to apologize in advance. If you came here to be in quiet solitude without being asked to stretch yourself, to take a risk, then I'm sorry, I'm going to disappoint you. Let's practice real love. So this week, I had the pleasure of taking an online course. Now that may sound strange, but I had the pleasure of taking an online course from our communications group on what it means to be a United Methodist. And I must have done that for some reason, because it ended up integrating into my sermon today. And I have this question: do you know what the mission statement is of the United Methodist Church? I do. But I really wanted to know where that mission statement came from, and I'll tell you in a minute why mission statements to me have kind of a soft spot. What I found was that it didn't have one. We didn't have a mission statement until 2008. There was structure for the church organization, there was a constitution, there were articles governing the local church, but there was no actual mission statement. People came to church to worship, they came to church to pray, ministers were ordained, they did amazing works, they taught their children in Sunday school and adults in Christian education. Maybe there was a little bit of drifting going on. So let's practice real love. Christ came to us to change the world. Again, this is from John, from The Message. This is how we've come to understand and experience love. Christ sacrificed his life for us. This is why we ought to live sacrificially for our fellow believers. It's not just being out for ourselves. If you see some brother or sister in need and have the means to do something about it, but turn a cold shoulder and do nothing, what happens to God's love? It disappears. And you and me, we all made it disappear. Ouch. I don't want to be the one that makes love disappear. And I was wondering, as I was doing all this work on the mission statement, if the Council of Bishops were worried about this passage, that we as Methodists were making love disappear, or at least perceived as doing so. In my readings, it seems the bishop felt that the church without a mission statement was missing the point. This very point in John. The point being that we have a means to help our brothers and sisters. We have the knowledge and understanding to help them experience and feel the awesome love that God shares with us. I believe the bishops knew that without a mission statement, a church is just a place to gather. As wonderful as that may be, it was just a place to come together and feel better. As heartwarming as that can be, it was maybe just for ourselves. It may have been that without this mission statement, they feared we were turning a cold shoulder to our brothers and sisters. And I think they heard the message. Let's practice real love. Now, some of you know that I came to ministry in a really bizarre path. And when I built my first business, the advisors turned to me and said, "Rick, you need a mission statement." I had read all about starting a business. I understood the hype around mission statements. And if you read Inc. magazine as I did, I basically consumed it every day, it was the rage at the time. But it was more than that. Mission statements provided a public message that everyone, both inside and outside of the organization, could turn to if they felt like they didn't know what they were supposed to do. The mission statement was supposed to give guidance and clarity and a sense of purpose. And so I did a little research, and here are a few mission statements from some familiar corporations. Here's the first one. To refresh the world in mind, body, and spirit, to inspire moments of optimism and happiness through our brands and actions, create value, and make a difference. Anybody? It could have been from a church. It's Coca-Cola. Or how about this one? To give people the power to share and make the world more open and connected.
Facebook?
Been in the news, yeah. Maybe there's a little more sharing than what they intended going on. How about this one? To create a better everyday life for the many people. Now, the grammar's a little odd, but that's probably the translation's issue. It's IKEA. And I read a story of how IKEA was founded, and to be honest, I believe they actually are keeping true to that mission statement. Although, I have to tell you, when I've assembled some of their furniture, I didn't feel very connected and better until it was done, but that's just their furniture. But I think you get the point. A mission statement is supposed to be something that tells everyone in that company or organization what the purpose is. So the bishops thought and prayed for 4 years, from 2004 to 2008, to bring it to the General Assembly. What is the purpose of the church was the question. They study and they pray, and I think that they saw in this passage and elsewhere to love each other as Christ loves us. That they understood that we had an obligation to not turn a cold shoulder to our brothers and sisters. So the bishops came up with a statement. It is powerful. I think it's also reflective of what John Wesley spoke and wrote about. I also think it's reflective on what it means to be a Christian. Here it is. The mission of the church is to make disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world. Did you catch that last bit? It's a command for the transformation of the world. In other words, we come together to practice real love. It actually goes on. There's a second statement. It's not as catchy, not as succinct, but I think it's equally important. Local churches and extension ministries of the church provide the most significant arenas through which disciple making occurs. That would be us. We're a local church. That's what we're called. I think they could have shortened it to disciple making happens here. I feel like maybe that should be a sign over our door. Disciple making happens here because we have a big job and we cannot do it alone. More than that, as today's gospel proclaims, he told us to love each other in line with the original command. As we keep his commands, we live deeply and surely in him, and he lives in us. And this is how we experience his deep and abiding presence in us, by the Spirit he gave us. Let's practice real love. Our mission statement, this passage from John, the command to love one another, all knit closely together. We as Christian disciples are transformed by his love. We stretch out our hearts and our hands when we see someone in pain. We reach out and feed the hungry through our efforts. We educate the children in our community right here through our local preschool. We visit with the sick. We bring communion to those unable to come to hear. We provide shelter, a sanctuary, from the evils of this world through our knowing him. We share the gospel. We practice real love. But it isn't enough to sit here safely tucked into our sanctuary. If you were here last week, you know I spoke of sanctuaries that stretch from our church to the churches around us, sheltering immigrants, to the seed vault in the Arctic, and even to the vision of our planet from space. Now, John tells us that we must not be selfish and keep the good news of Christ to ourselves. We must not hold on to these things, for if we do, there is absolutely no way we can transform the world and keep true to our mission statement. No, we must practice real love. Now, how on earth can we, in this sanctuary, a little church, transform the world? John tells us, as disciples of Christ, when we see some brother or sister in need and have the means to do something about it, we must not turn a cold shoulder. Instead, we must extend our hands in love. When we feel overwhelmed personally by anger or frustration or hurt, we must choose not to sit in isolation, but instead turn to our community of faith. They are disciples willing to extend their hands to us. We come together to pray and sing with the certain knowledge that the Holy Spirit works in and through us. That's how we practice real love. I asked you last week to become a sanctuary of hope and healing and love. I'm asking you again this week. We as United Methodists are to make disciples of Christ. To do that, we cannot remain in our safe sanctuary. We will have to risk a lot. We will have to break free from the safety and comfort of sitting in the same pew every Sunday. We may have to, and I know how hard this is for us New Englanders. We may have to tell somebody how wonderful it is to know Christ out loud. I know it's hard. But if we know Christ, and we know the joys of being here together, why can't we share it? If you see some brother or sister in need and have the means to do something about it, but turn a cold shoulder and do nothing, what happens to God's love? It disappears, and you and I made it disappear. When Cameron and I shared the story about Earth Day earlier, I talked about it. It was in 1970. I marched for our local community that day. We all broke out of high school in the middle of the day without permission and went on a march. We thought it was important. I don't know if you remember what happened that year or the year right before, but it was the first massive oil spill, one in Santa Barbara, California. People were angry. People were upset. On that day, 22 million people came together to march for a change. And we did. We made something happen. On December 2nd of that same year, the Environmental Protection Agency was founded. Some say that had nothing to do with it. I beg to differ. I think that we were disciples at that time of our planet, and it had enough. In 1970, I too was a disciple who saw a wrong and tried to do something about it. I was just one tiny voice among millions, but I was certain we could transform the world. It doesn't take more than that little trowel to start. So you see, the mission of this church to make disciples is, as John, the writing of John said, the means to do something. The cold shoulder would be our not willing to share that something with someone else. It is us stepping away, and for some, including me, way, way far away as fast as I could. But for some time now, it's been stepping instead way out of my comfort zone and inviting somebody to church. Or if you're on the crop walk, saying, I'm here because of my church and my love of God. Ooh, that might be scary. I don't know. Or when you're sitting with somebody, and you say, I'm here because I know that he loved me, and I'm here to share that love with you. I've had the blessing of sitting with the sick, visiting people in the hospital, visiting people at home. And I'll tell you, that's practicing real love. When you do that, you give them an opportunity, a chance to become a disciple. Because disciples are made right here. That's practicing real love. Love that will last forever. Amen. This morning's offering will now be taken. Thank you.